I'm going to call to order a regular meeting of the Grove Beach City Council for Monday, August 3rd, 2015. Would you all please stand and rise with us in a moment of silence for the brave men and women who have given the ultimate sacrifice for this country? Please remain standing. Councilmember Nichols, will you lead us in the flag salute tonight?
Cover your heart. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. When you're ready, roll call.
Here.
Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements?
Certainly. Honorable Mayor, Council Members, on July 20th, Council met in closed session on several items that are listed in the agenda. The City Manager Employee Evaluation was pulled. There was existing litigation on Lopez and negotiation on Pacific Companies and existing litigation on Lindsay versus City of Grover Beach. After returning into open session, it was announced that there were no reportable actions taken by the council.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Let's look at the agenda review. This is where the council will review the order of the agenda as petitions. And this is any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item within the interest or the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that the council cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. So I have, looks like, three speaker request forms tonight. Judy Parks.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and our council members. Last meeting, we vehemently appealed to you to act against the irresponsible and toxic tar sands crude oil trains from Canada to grumble through our little paradise 5 times per week for 20 years, spewing diesel particulate pollution, which causes disease, the oil ultimately to be shipped to Asia. Since the U.S. Department of Transportation predicts 10 major train derailments per year, and we all live within the lethal blast zone, it's only a matter of time before this deadly disaster manifests. In fact, 2 Saturdays ago, July 25th, in Philadelphia, another train derailment terrified all. We need you to urge the Planning Commission to vote no against this disastrous proposal. Thank you for listening to your constituents.
Thank you, Judy. Charles Varney.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Happy to be here tonight. Soft Phillips 66 is on the agenda. A little different. But I'm still just really stuck on this fact that we have 95,000 people in San Luis Obispo County living in the blast zone of an oil train derailment. You know that 76% of the population here in Grover Beach lives in that blast zone. And, you know, it would be comical if it wasn't so kind of tragic, but at the last meeting when the during public 5 trains a week, you know, a mile long filled with, you know, 2.5 million gallons of toxic petroleum, and nobody gets notified. This is a huge crack in the system, and I was inspired to write you a little letter, which I'll leave with you. But I think this is fundamentally, it comes down to a civil and human rights issue. And I want to read you a paragraph from it. This is a civil and human rights issue. The right to know that something of this magnitude and impact is planned for your neighborhood should not be the responsibility of citizen volunteers. This is a fundamental responsibility of government, to inform us of significant risk to life and property so we can be part of the decision-making process if we so choose, to not require specific public notification of all persons living in the blast evacuation zone is a clear dereliction of duty and keeps the public uninformed and thus uninvolved. Gee, who benefits from this? I wonder. We have been urging you to agendize this item. Don't wait for the final EIR. And I think even more so now, agendizing it so that there can be public discussion, public information, public education is in the service.
Good evening. Another day, another city council meeting with no agenda. Date set for debate about the P66 rail terminal project. How long will it take this body to commit to a date? The following towns, cities, organizations, and school districts have stood up and publicly decried the P66 project as dangerous. Each has written a letter to the Slo Planning Commission urging them to vote no to the project. They are Alameda County and Alameda Health Services, Berkeley and the Berkeley Rent Stabilization Board, Camarillo, Davis, Moore Park, Pleasant Valley School District, Oakland, Richmond, Santa Barbara County, Ventura Unified School District, Simi Valley, San Jose, San Leandro, and San Leandro School District, San Luis Obispo, Santa Cruz County, Ventura City, and Ventura Unified School District. In addition, the city of Goleta, and just last week, the city of Santa Barbara, voted to send in a letter in opposition. This morning, I listened to the replay of the Santa Barbara City Council meeting. You folks might want to listen to it yourselves, since there appears to be some misgivings about weighing in with an option, either for or against this project, prior to the release of the final EIR. Let me ask you this. Are you worried about being sued for weighing in before the release of the final EIR? This issue was brought up in Santa Barbara, and to quote the Santa Barbara City Attorney, quote, the anti-slap law gives great protection to public agencies such as yourself. He didn't say such as yourself. I'm quoting. The anti-slap law gives great protection to public agencies that use their First Amendment rights to express themselves. So I don't think there's much danger of being sued, end quote. I practiced law for 33 years in New Hampshire, and of course I cannot advise you on the application of the California anti-slap statute, but I'll bet you dollars of donuts that your city attorney would agree with the Santa Barbara Council. And as I said 2 weeks ago, and as the mayor knows, there can be nothing in the final EIR that can be materially different than what is already in the revised draft EIR. So to put it simply, this council has all the necessary information to make an informed decision about this project tonight if it wanted to. One thing for certain is that Grover Beach is as much affected by this project as any other community. The majority of Grover is in the blast zone. This is arguably the most important public health and safety issue to ever come before this council. So what are you waiting for? Just a few weeks ago, the largest union in the country, the National Education Association, sent a letter to the Planning Commission stating, quote, please put student safety first. On behalf of NEA's 3 million members and the students they serve, I implore you to reject the proposed expansion of the rail spur to the Santa Maria refinery, end quote. Your sister cities of AG and Pismo Beach have finally committed to agendizing this issue. When can we expect this council to step up and do the same? Thank you.
Andreas Easterhand.
Good evening, council members, mayor. I know I spoke with Mayor Scholes, and he said it might be there might be a discussion regarding agendizing this issue. I would just say that, unfortunately, I have a family situation that I have to get to tonight, but I would ask that you consider putting this on the agenda. The only thing is the state legislature will be coming back the middle of August and leaving the middle of September. So if there's no possibility that you can get this discussed and passed and get the letters out to who requests the letters go to, then I would ask you as individual members of the city council to write on your stationery, and I think you can do that. I'm sure that council will tell you this is permissible. And please know, when it's all said and done, the Central Coast Taxpayers Association will do a final report about the letters that were sent to the Board of Supervisors, the seven cities in this county, and we will be telling the voters, the taxpayers in this county, as to what decisions were being made and where people are in their support or not support request. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Strand. Okay, I don't have any other speaker requests.
I'm not retired yet, and I have cattle in Tank Farm Road, and I go 6-7 days a week because they're heifers and they need my attention. I am getting sick and tired of going up 101. And these people that are so smart and educated about 3.5, 4.0, they take the fast lane for the slow lane. I caught two Caltrans guys the other day, and I told them, why in the hell don't you put a sign out here, slow traffic to the right? When you get out of the state of California, all those states have signs, slow traffic to the right. And there's nobody out there like there is. And Hydera, I go down to Avila, and I go off and I take the frontage roads to come home. But last night I didn't. I'm brave. 5 o'clock, coming all the way. And here's a guy on a motorcycle. I was watching the traffic in him. I didn't see the final episode, but the motorcycle's in junk and he's laying on the pavement. And the fire truck couldn't get down through there because everybody's bumper, bumper. And so he has to take the center. The highway patrol, he takes the ditch. We got millions of people in this state, but it's like I said, people are dumb, but this guy said it in Washington, D.C. The ag guy said, no, it's the politicians, and they're right, because any traffic to the right, I just don't get that, because if I take, I have to take, when I get the spyglass, I go under and go down in front of the city hall. And then come out, I can make a right and come back on. But that's unnecessary for an old man 80 years old. People should have more sense driving like that. So I'm asking you to write a letter and tell Caltrans to put some signs out there. Is that too much? Does that cost too much? Is that going to save anybody's life? Is that going to... I don't know whether... I just asked the chief if the guy died or what happened. The other thing, I was coming back from the ranch, so I get some fast food, and I get my wife's prescription of Bonds. I normally go up Oak Park, but I'm getting tired because I got my hand on the beverage and the steering wheel, and I got to make a left on Oak Park. And it's not easy. You think it is, but it's not. So I decided, no, last month or so, I've gone 16th. And so I make a corner, 122, where DeSantos used to live, have her business. Big potholes there, and I dodged, and I lost the beverage. And I got out, and I was cussing. My mother been here, she watched, I saw on the list. I want a list of how the streets are being taken care of, and who's first, second, third, and fourth. And you know, Karen Bright gets mail every Friday from the city hall. I want mail in my mailbox right across the street. And I want to know how much it costs. And there's $100,000 of money going for administration fees. Boy, my son, he calls me every day and tells me what he's doing and spending. Because I can't do it all anymore.
Thank you, John. So with that, you need to come up to the podium. Give me.
Would that come up?
Well, come on up. I haven't closed it yet.
Simply asking for permission since we came in a little late.
No, that's fine. Please.
My name's Greg Gazin. I'm from 252.
Can you pull the microphone up
towards 252 North 3rd Street, Grover Beach. And we are, I guess, in the incineration zone. Simply reporting, as the other gentlemen have, that we're very concerned about it. Whenever you do put it on the agenda, please note that...
I know we typically don't take a discussion of items that are presented in public communication, so I'm just wondering, can we legally take a departure tonight? And
well, I mean, you certainly are able to direct staff to either agendize or provide information. That's part of the process.
Communications, but I think tonight what we'll do is have a discussion of, we've got, looks like, three requests tonight, and I'd like to take Ms. Seastrand's first, and are the council members interested in placing on the agenda a discussion of SCA-5, and I know her specific request was a letter opposing, so I think there would be an opportunity for us to put it on an agenda and have pros and cons and then make a decision on that. So I want to see if there's consensus to do that.
Yes.
Okay. And then I know that there was discussion about timing. So August 17th is our next meeting. And then, Bob, what is the first meeting in September?
I'll have to look at a calendar real quickly, but...
Because of Labor Day.
Because of Labor Day. Correct.
Okay. So there's a... And I was... I know she talked about timing, and selfishly, I was looking at September the 8th because I most likely will not be here on August 17th, but if the council would like to have that discussion while I'm not present, then I'm okay with that. So what's the
yes,
thought?
Yes, that's fine.
September 8th?
September 8th is fine.
Okay, very good. Let's see. I think there was only one other request. I thought I had three. Sorry about that. So let me say that our who reside in the city of Grover Beach, we want you to know that we've been listening. We appreciate the respectful way in which you've approached this council. And I know that we've talked about trying to wait until we have the EIR, but I think tonight we'll have some discussion about whether we want to place this on an agenda and the date of that agenda. So is there interest in placing the Phillips 66? I'm going to say Phillips 66, but it's really more an issue of public safety, because I think the issue of what goes up and down these rail lines and us being prepared to respond to them goes beyond a rail spur project. So is there any interest with this council to place this item on a future agenda?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thinking this through, I would say either we'd look at September 21st or the first meeting in October. What date would that be?
October 5th is the first meeting in October, Mayor.
Okay. Any preference on those dates?
Not for me.
Okay, so let's do September 21st.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just to have clarification, so your area of concern is public safety as it relates to rail traffic through Grover Beach?
That's correct, and that would include, obviously, some of the other topics that have been discussed and brought before this council. Okay. We good? Okay. And I believe that was the, those were the two. And if I think of the third, then we'll have a chance to talk about it during council communication. Okay. So then let's move on to our public hearing of this evening. And this is basically an introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance amending Article 10 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to renew a pipeline franchise and agreement and assignment to Phillips 66. City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. This item has been before you on several occasions. It is here before you after certain corrections and changes have been made to the ordinance. There's a couple of minor typos we will correct that were caught by Councilmember Shaw. We appreciate that. One of the things that I do want to bring to your attention is that Phillips 66 has apparently switched reps on this project, or at least on the franchise agreement. I've been receiving emails from the person that was actually dealing with this a year and a half ago, roughly. And we haven't come full circle on it, but my proposal is that we move forward, and if I receive any communications from her on this, obviously we'll deal with those at the second meeting and the second reading, and I'll advise you accordingly. With that, I propose that we move forward. Again, this is a franchise that was originally put together in 1958 with the county. It's a 50-year term. When Grover Beach became a city in 1959, we inherited the franchise along with all the right-of-ways. The proposed renewal is for 25 years, which would begin in 2008, which was basically the renewal date. Consistent with your direction, we researched adjoining jurisdictions. Pismo Beach has an ordinance only. Arroyo Grande has an ordinance and a franchise agreement. That option is still available to the council. Right now, it's an ordinance amending the code. We can look at an agreement to be brought forward at the next meeting, which will basically mirror the ordinance, and I'm open to your direction on that. Tonight, the document is before you. We're looking for you to introduce the ordinance, conduct the first reading by title only, obviously open the public hearing, receive any comments from the public, close the public hearing, or better yet, in this instance, I'll submit, and I'm open for any questions or comments.
Very good. Let's have questions. Councilmember Shaw, any questions?
No, I don't have any questions. We've gone through this pretty thoroughly. I feel comfortable with it.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols?
Same here.
Okay. And I don't believe, I don't have any questions. We have discussed this, and I think it's pretty clear this is a franchise that we inherited, and staff has made some modest, some minor modifications to this, correct? And I believe you're asking for direction not only on the ordinance, but do you come back with an agreement?
Yes. Basically, an agreement would be a contract between Phillips 66 and the city, which is consistent with the ordinance. It's belt and suspenders approach, but it's available, and it certainly would not be any great deal of additional work. So if you desire to have that, we can bring that for your approval at the time when we conduct the second reading and potential adoption.
Okay, very good. This is a public hearing. I'm going to open this up to the public.
Agendized throughout the county. I don't know which one is which.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mead. I'll get you an answer here shortly. Is there anyone else? Please come forward.
Hi, I'm Peggy Midling, and I'm from Grover Beach. And I'm a 45-degree slant from the mesa down to the dunes, and that kind of bothers me. But anyway, I just don't think it's a very... I really do think we should take a strong stand against any... Well, yes, except for a lot of the trains will be going around the beach area, and... It's just an additional. Right now, there are a bunch of old, they look like oil cars that have been parked there for months on the train tracks. And as I understand it, nobody in any government has any jurisdiction over the rails. I may be mistaken, but that's what I have understood. So, and the only way to stop this is by the San Luis County ordinance, stopping the development of it. Otherwise, nobody has any jurisdiction over it, as far as I can see. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Midling. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to the franchise agreement or the ordinance?
I don't really know what this is about, and I wonder if you could just franchise entails.
Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close the public comment. Staff, Ms. Mead asked a question about a specific pipeline.
Any transmission lines that are within the right-of-way within the city limits of Grover Beach are covered by the franchise agreement. So whichever lines Phillips 66 has in existence in the city's right-of-ways are covered by this agreement.
Okay.
And with regard to, if you'd like me to proceed with the second question.
Yes, please.
Just a brief overview. This is a franchise that, again, has been in existence for quite a while. We have made some changes to it. There are some provisions for removal in the event it's abandoned. Basically, it's a standard franchise agreement like any other public utility for use of the public right-of-way for the transmission lines. There are obligations that run with it as far as removal, as far as insurance, renewal fees. The actual rate for the franchise agreement is set by state law. It's nominal. City gets, I think, less than $500 a month, a year, for the fees. They're dictated by statute.
Okay, very good. And then, Ms. Middley, you had brought up questions about the rail line. That's a topic for a different point. Let's have some discussion, or is anyone on the council prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion that we introduce and conduct the first reading of the ordinance by title only, and that we'll continue the public hearing open until next time, schedule the second reading, and also at that time we'll bring back an agreement. Is that okay?
Okay, so there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, is there any further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Thank you. Let's move on to our consent agenda tonight. This is a agenda where we take routine items as a group. We have five items on consent this evening. The first is the Treasury report for the period of July 14th through the 29th. The second is a Treasury report for the Streets Bond Act, Outreach Employee Group. And then the final item on consent is authorization to enter into agreement with Canon for Professional Services associated with the 2015 One Street Rehabilitation and Repair Project. Do any members of the council want to pull any items from consent tonight?
No.
Okay. And I don't have any speaker requests to address any items on the consent. So. With that, I'll accept a motion.
I move we accept the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. There's no additional discussion. Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Open the staff report on this.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I'll do an introduction. As the council will recall, during the original budget review, the council had seen a request from Visit Slow organization regarding sponsoring or continuing to sponsor the Savor the Central Coast event in the amount of $5,000. During council deliberations, that amount was reduced from $5,000 to $2,500. The final amendments for the budget were adopted on July 6th. And at that time, just prior to final adoption, the council considered allowing that amount. So tonight, you have a presentation that will be provided by Lauren Edwards, and she's with the organization that is actually contracting to run the event. And she will ask you to review an option for enhancing your contribution. And with that, Ms. Edwards.
Sure. Hi there, welcome, and thank you for having us. My name is Lauren Edwards, and I am with Fast Forward Event Productions. And I'm here with my colleague, Michelle Meter, and we are the event production company that has transitioning to work with Visit San Luis Obispo County and Sunset Magazine to produce this year's Sunset Savor the Central Coast. Wanted to just give you a quick overview of some of the exciting things happening for this year's event. Our theme this year is All Roads Lead to Savor, really focusing on the Great American Road Trip coming up to San Luis Obispo County, driving in from San Diego, Fresno, Bakersfield, down from San Francisco in the Northern California. So just a quick overview of our discussion tonight is to give you an update on some of the events that will be happening this year. Quick little view of some of the recent marketing initiatives and materials, and hopefully some toolkits that we can offer some of the Grover Beach participating businesses and hotel partners. And then to discuss, like we just discussed, the approved budget right now for the participation within the Central Coast Pavilion at the main event on Saturday and Sunday at the main event. And then if there are any options to possibly already, it's August. August 20th, we will be hosting a media preview event at Edna Valley Vineyards. And as a participant in the event, we'd love to have some representation from Grover Beach there. That will be a nice luncheon, hosting local media, and just kind of a kickoff of all things Savor. Then we start our major four-day event on September 24th and September 25th. We'll be having our adventure tours. And we're very excited about our new Strings at Sunset opening night event on September 24th. This is a new event happening at Vina Robles Amphitheater, and it is a full multi-sensory evening event with various celebrity chefs and tasting stations, the Sunset Magazine International Wine Competition winners, tasting stations, and some amazing, engaging entertainment. It's not your typical Sunday. Will be the main event at the historic Santa Margarita Ranch. And we do have confirmed editor participation within all of the events from our Sunset editor partners, Margot True, Sarah Schneider, Peter Fish, and Johanna Silver, along with some additional editors here. It's kind of hard to read, but I know we made copies and we're happy to send this out, but I wanted just to show you a few of the recent Sunset Magazine promotions that have been going out highlighting the county. We've done a few different email blasts going out to 20,000 of their subscribers, and we're very excited that in the September issue of Sunset, the typical advertisement that is there for Savor, it's actually a three-page advertorial highlighting kind of the entire county, South County to North County. One of the exciting things we've done as a production company is really trying to give you and all of the different communities different tools to help sell the experience of Savor to your hotel lodging partners, to folks coming to visit beautiful Grover Beach, and letting them know about some different opportunities. We've also developed some different tools that lodging partners and business partners in the communities can use on their own websites, their own social media, and really kind of trying to get the word out about all things Savor. And we have a marketing toolkit that actually gives sample emails inviting guests to come and stay and enjoy the weekend in Savor. We've got video libraries of the different entertainment that's coming for Strings at Sunset, highlights, bios, headshots of all the chefs and editorial celebrities that will be here. This is just kind of a little bit of an overview of Strings at Sunset. I told you it's very interactive, multi-sensory, tasting stations throughout the opening night event with food and entertainment and amazing wine at every different corner. At this level of sponsorship participation, that would include an upgraded booth, interactive booth space within the Central Coast Pavilion within the main event. Some of the options thought to really kind of increase engagement within that booth would be, like I said, an expanded size booth that you could highlight some of your local partners, food and beverage partners. Specifically, we had kind of chatted about Man Rock Brewery being new to the area and kind of doing a specialty beer tasting within your booth and having them hopefully maybe provide food too. So it's something really engaging, can talk about the brewery process and then all of the different products that they have or any other amazing business in Grover Beach. Offering a lounge kind of atmosphere for guest relaxation and conversation so people will really come in and sit and enjoy those food and beverage opportunities and talk to your partners there at Grover Beach. Lastly, possibly doing an interactive game or activity for data collection and engagement, whether it's something incorporating the actual brewery, doing a growler ring toss or some kind of physical kind of challenge and engagement in terms of a game or a sweepstakes to then be able to capture guest data. With this package as it stands, you are eligible for our great marketing package. Listings on the website, highlighted in social media, obviously the ability to use all of those marketing tools and list any hotel or restaurant packages on our website, and then be listed in the event program and the advertisements. In addition to one of the kind of ideas that we thought that might be something of interest for an additional $1,500 investment would be to be travel and adventure seminars on that stage. And with that, we welcome you to help us lead All Roads Lead to Savor, And if there's any questions that we can answer, we appreciate it. We're just glad to be here and really put a face to the name and introduce ourselves as the new production company.
Very good. Bob, did you have any concluding remarks on that?
It's certainly for as it relates back to the community, and whether or not this is the right fit at the current time for the council in terms of our marketing efforts.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
I just wanted to add, actually, I spoke with one of the owners of Man Rock today. We've chatted a couple times, but she indicated that they would be willing to participate in a booth should we decide to go that way. And she was very, she has been at the farmers, our Sunday farmers market, and she's very pro talking up the city and wants to promote her business along with the city. She thinks that's a very positive spin. So, because I know, one question I had was who will we put into these booths? So I know we have at least one person willing to participate. One question I had was, you talked about a 3-page highlight article that's coming out. Now, if we, you know, go forward with our participation, would individual cities be within that article, or do you know how it would be laid out?
It's highlighting the entire county. It's already gone to editorial review and everything else, but it was just kind of an example of hopefully the burgeoning and growing relationship with Sunset Magazine and that continued growth with Sunset Saver.
And then along with doing the $2,500 expanded booth, I just want to make sure I understand that the city, then we would be responsible for the costs such as the furniture and the booth, et cetera, right?
Correct. But we will absolutely help with all of the on-site integration and activation and you know, can help with any event coordination.
We had done gift baskets, which were well received, and then gift baskets were not allowed anymore. Would gift baskets be allowed to be brought back?
Absolutely. You can do really pretty much whatever you'd like in your booth to have that engagement and data collection. So if it's giving away a weekend in Grover Beach or an experience on the dunes or whatever kind of item that you think would be engaging, and if it's a gift basket, I don't.
Okay. And just so I understand then, the second option of an additional $1,500, so that would mean we would do a total commitment of $4,000. For that $4,000, we would get a small booth, as we've done in the past, with and the sponsoring of a seminar.
You would still be able to have this size, larger, interactive booth.
Oh, okay, a large booth and the seminar.
And then the seminar sponsoring on the travel and adventure stage, with signage and credit in the program, and hopefully development, a little bit of maybe one of the activities that highlights Grover Beach.
Okay, and is there a way you could let us know, give us some examples of maybe what some other small cities of our size, what kind of commitment they are doing or things they're doing?
Sure, in terms of for this year?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm happy to say that your sister community, Oro Grande, has decided to come back and sponsor part of Sunset Saver this year, and they will be doing the school community garden. Again, they did it a few years ago and highlighting Arroyo Grande in bloom. We have a lot of the, or a few of the different neighboring to the north beach communities hosting adventure tours. And I know that's something that we, you know, being the transition year this year, want to make sure that we are aware of your full budgeting process and all the presentation timing for next year to talk about, you know, any further participation for next year, whether it's an adventure tour or, you know, possibly a dinner or, you know, other different ideas for 2016 Saver.
And could you tell me if you know off the top of your head what the monetary commitment of AG Arroyo Grande was to do the school garden?
They're coming in at $7,500.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
Having never been to a Saver event, because I'm allergic to the sun,
Sun protection is very important to us this year.
It gets hot up there.
No, I just melt. No. what are these adventure?
Adventure tours are an opportunity for the Thursday and Friday for guests that are coming for the main event to purchase an opportunity to experience an amazing, not always outwardly adventure, something unique about that opportunity. For example, Morro Bay is hosting a kayaking fishing experience. Okay. So something highlighting each one of the different communities.
Okay, thank you very much.
And are those tours over and above what they're paying for the booth, though? Is that a separate cost?
It is, yes. Okay. It's a sponsorship level, and then they are also responsible for all the organization and the planning and cost. There is a $15 per person fee that goes back for any food and beverage with the lunch or the opportunity for brunch that they're hosting within that adventure tour.
Okay. And at the current level that was approved at $2,500, can you tell me again the size of the booth that the...
It's a 10 by 20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the standard booth within the whole entire festival is a 10 by 10.
Okay.
So it allows for a little bit more interaction within your booth.
Great. Thank you. I do have questions of staff, so maybe I can let you take a quick break. I want to talk to Kathy Pecker, who has led our effort in the past.
In the past. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
So, Kathy, can you tell me, I know that we've invested in Savor from the start.
A 10 by 10 booth space, and we've created a theme each year. We've had mostly revolving around the beach. We've had the beach bonfire theme. We've had the ocean surfboard, beach butlers theme. We've had an interactive photo booth. We've had a kind of our own gift basket giveaway drawings where we collected donations and sponsorships from Amtrak, lots of restaurants. We did gift baskets to bring people.
Yeah, on the train.
Amtrak, yeah, on the train.
And then
I'm sorry.
Have we been able to...
I'm sorry, another item.
Have we
sponsored
been
the train in Savor as well.
But that's true. Have we been able to track people who've come to the booth and then see if there have been any touches beyond Savor? Because I'm asking this question of, obviously, for those who don't know, I mean, when Savor first started, the council did, I think the former council said, hey, let's sponsor the train. So I've been to numerous events. So I want to make sure that we're getting the bang for our buck, you know. And so have we been able to track people coming to the booth? Has there been any additional touches from the Savor beyond?
Yes, we have tracked participants by asking them to please fill out a card and that has their information and their email. We've received between 100 and 300 a day for both days, and we have entered in all of those names and addresses in an Excel spreadsheet, and then we continually send out email blasts when special events are happening. Mostly we've been sending our annual calendar events for special events specific to the city of Grover Beach, but in terms of their replies and or if they come in and visit the city, we're not aware of tracking that information, but we have those Excel spreadsheet with our distribution list of emails.
Okay, and would we be able to do that with a 10 by 20 booth under the $2,500 contribution?
Absolutely.
Okay. Can you tell me what has been the actual cost? Because I'm understanding that if we were to go to a larger booth, we would have to pay for or lease the furniture. So do we really know what the cost is for the city to have a booth at Savor?
I believe we're required to use the Savor contracted furniture.
So you got to use their vendors, correct?
Okay. It might be different this year.
Okay, so maybe she can...
Yeah. secure some different quotes on, we use a variety of different rental organizations. We're actually working quite closely with a very exciting local partner up in Paso Robles that does refurbished furniture and kind of a shabby chic beach look to it. So we are happy to help.
Great. Thank you.
Kind of put together a plan.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kathy. So let's see. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address the item before the council? Seeing no one come forward, so let's have some discussion. Barbara, you have anything?
I'm kind of inclined to keep the level we have already budgeted for. We're on a really tight budget this year, and I don't think it's the right time for us to expand our promotion further than what we can on the $2,500 level.
Okay. Miriam?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the $2,500 level, you know, At first I was a little bit even worried about going that far just because I wasn't sure if we'd be able to fill the booth and if we had people excited. But it sounds like we have, the first business I even reached out to was excited to participate, and hopefully, you know, there will be others. And Kathy seems to have lots of tricks up her sleeve as well for staffing a booth and filling a booth. And I was also very happy to hear about the 100 to 300 emails. And now that we're getting a lot of new restaurants and businesses in town, you know, perhaps we could work something out with them for certain emails. And maybe that's a way of directly drawing people into the city. And especially if we really put this booth together with how do we take these people and get them back to our city? So possibly giveaways, bringing people to our restaurants and our downtown would be very useful. So I think I would be in favor of giving it a go with the booth.
Okay, and then I just want a clarification. I know there was a creative idea suggested with Man Rock coming to a city booth and serving samples of alcohol. I don't think we could facilitate that.
It may be a conflict, obviously, to have a city serving alcohol at a city booth.
We can certainly discuss this with CJPIA, but I suspect that they may have an issue with that.
Wow, that's a PC answer for a city attorney.
Right. The liability can be probably transferred to their insurance and coverage, assuming they can serve off-site, and I think they can, or they can get an ABC one-day license or an event license. As far as the perception or appearance, that's in your realm, so that's a decision you would need to make.
Okay, so I think that may be a detail that may be staff. Please come forward, Kathy.
One of the options that we did one of the years was we partnered with a local restaurant, and they purchased a booth right next to us. Oh. So we were adjacent, and they ran their own operation next to the city, and we worked together. So that's an option for me.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, even the way we lay out the booth, maybe we could just clearly define.
Well, we both had Grover Beach signs up, so.
Okay. So the question is, are there booths? Is there space available that would allow for something like that to happen? Okay, thank you. So let me just say that I did go to the first two or three Saver events, and, you know, I think it's got so much potential. I think that we had gone through the effort and trying to determine, is there a lot of value add for the community? And obviously we're a smaller city with smaller resources, and so, you know, big events are in Pismo or elsewhere, so it's trying to find that niche. I would just say I agree. I think at this point, and I'm glad to see there's this new folks that are taking the reins on this. I'm comfortable staying at the $2,500 level as suggested and then have ongoing conversations and see that in next year we can increase that amount, start to grow that relationship. So that's kind of that's where I'm at right now. And what does the rest of the council want to do on this?
I would agree with that. I would just add on that we're starting to get close, so maybe if Lauren and Kathy can start networking and if they need anything on the council level, I'd be happy to be that liaison, or I'm sure Bob as well. And just, I just want to make sure with doing the investment, we have a good, solid thing there. Time's going to come up fast. So.
Okay. So I think, staff, do you have sufficient direction?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, it's consensus.
Very good. And it's nice meeting you both, and I'm sure we look forward to developing the relationship further. Okay? So let's move on to item number 8. This is drainage standard discussion, and this is regarding Grover Tech Center. And I think we'll give Mr. Eck a couple of minutes. It's okay?
Let's see.
And so while he's working through this technical, are you almost there?
Close.
Okay. Never mind.
Got it. Sorry about the delay there. So item number 8 is the drainage standard discussion for the Grover Tech Center. Can't see the slideshow in here, so I'll have to go on faith. There we go. So Brad Ford, the owner of the Grover Tech Center, approached staff to discuss the building permit requirements for a fourth building on the Grover Tech Center property. Staff met with Mr. Ford twice to discuss the requirements, which resulted in the letter to City Council requesting a waiver of the requirement for the drainage standard. As a little background, the project was approved in 2001 and consists of a single lot with up to 10 commercial buildings located on Front Street. All site work on the project, I should say all off-site work on the project was completed prior to 2006, and buildings and parking improvements for the first three units were completed prior to 2006 also. So three of the 10 units have been constructed, and what remains is a parking lot paving, landscaping, and of course the buildings themselves for the remainder of the 7 units. So again, as background, the city does experience some severe localized flooding in the downtown area and along Front Street. The cause is excess runoff from development that's carried in the street, often overtopping the curb and flooding travel lanes. The solution is on-site retention, and council recognized this in the 1980s and eventually adopted an on-site retention requirement for all new construction. Prior to 2006, the city drainage standard required all new development to retain all water on site. But it did provide a credit for existing impervious surfaces on redeveloped sites. There is no definition of redeveloped in the development code, but the standard indicates that redevelopment meant a removal of existing buildings. Good. In 2006, the council adopted an improved standard, and the new standard removed the credit for existing improvements on redeveloped sites. And, of course, this further reduces flooding and the impacts of new development on our localized flooding. The 2006 drainage standard applies to all building permits issued since 2006. As an example, it was applied to the Taco Bell project, AutoZone project, and Chevron, which were all redeveloped sites in accordance with the standard. It's important to note that the Grover Tech Center is not a vested project. A project is not vested unless there's a vesting tentative map that affords protection from new standards. So all standards in place today apply to new building permits. This would include new standards such as improvements to the building code, like fire sprinklers, and again the city's 2006 drainage standard. There we go. In the letter to council, Mr. Ford indicated that the Regional Water Board does not believe our standard applies to the Grover Tech Center. And I'd like to note that the Regional Water Quality Control Board requirement is different from the city standard in that it primarily relates to water quality and not flooding. And it allows an exemption for entitled projects, and our 2006 standard does not. Staff has determined that we would recommend against a waiver of the standard. Instead, staff is providing the following options for council consideration. They include, one, basically apply the standard to the project, which would mean no amendment to the standard. Three, staff is recommending that council provide direction on defining or redefining what a redeveloped site is for the purpose of applying the standard. And staff is recommending option number one, and that is to apply the standard to the project and to continue to apply the standard to all projects that have been entitled since 2006. And with that, that concludes my discussion, and I'm open for questions.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
Is here provided, I think, in your report. And just in discussing here, one of the risks with possibly changing the ordinance would be that existing buildings could possibly reduce or eliminate their drainage. Could you explain that, how that could occur?
Well, if you were to amend the standard for redeveloped sites, which I mentioned three of them, I think, a moment ago. So if the standard no longer applies to redeveloped sites that were entitled prior to 2006, technically the standard doesn't apply to those three projects, as an example. So they could theoretically request that requirement be removed from their projects and they allowed to be either develop the portion of their site that's a retention basin or cease operation of an existing underground basin, which again would contribute to additional flooding.
I see. So, for example, if a parking lot had a basin or an area,
possibly, and it would be contingent on the way the project was approved, basically, and how the requirement was included with the project. But I think it's a possibility.
Okay, and then I'm not sure if you can give me an estimate or an opinion. What if this drainage standard was not included? I'm reading through my background material. There's already a flooding issue in that area. What do you know, how much that flooding could be exacerbated or what the results would be?
Well, the proposed project, if the remaining seven units were developed with buildings and parking lots that were all impervious surfaces, and the drainage continued to flow where it flows now, it's hard to say how much, but I think it would certainly increase the depth of flooding along Front Street as well as in the railroad right of way. And if you recall, during most rainstorms, we see flooding in both locations. So.
Okay. just in reading through the background material, there was a discussion and of different ways to achieve this drainage standard, and one would be pervious concrete or underground storage. Do you have any way of telling me or any background as to how much pervious concrete costs versus regular concrete?
I have some pretty good information on it, actually. To clarify first, by using pervious concrete or pervious pavers, such as were used recently on Tract 3038, the Green Park development, what that does is reduce the amount of impervious surface that we use to calculate the requirement for retention. So it's not in place of, it's just simply that those surfaces that are now pervious are no longer contributing to runoff. So, for example, if Mr. Ford chose to develop the entire site with pervious pavers and put the building, my best guess is about 130% of normal paving.
I think that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Okay. Barbara?
Are you saying 130% more than?
30% more.
30%?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I heard 100 there somehow. I was down at the site today. Were there buildings there originally?
But we're relying on some fairly grainy aerial photos to make that determination.
I was wondering how it would qualify as a, quote, redevelopment project.
The term redeveloped is only defined in the standard itself, and that is within the city standard specifications, or standard drawings and specifications. Within that drainage ordinance and within the standards, it says a site will be considered redeveloped if the structures on the site are removed. So the structures on the site were removed, so the site's redeveloped.
Okay, I see. Okay. You said he mentioned only one building right now? He came for the
permit.
That
was the current discussion
for
the next building, right?
Okay. And if he surrounded this with pervious in the parking lot, not just the building area, would be considered a flooding contribution?
That's correct. Just the surface area of the building, or the plan
right.
area of the building,
right.
if you will.
Okay, I think that answers my questions.
Great.
Subdivided, therefore there's no vesting tentative map on the project, and therefore it's not vested.
Okay. How's drainage handled now?
There's no retention on site. The drainage runs from the buildings and parking lots to the rear of the lots near the railroad right-of-way, and there's drainage. There's a drainage device that transmits the drainage through into the railroad right-of-way.
Okay. And which way does the street drain?
Toward Grand Avenue.
Okay. Has staff sat down with Mr. Ford and talked about creative solutions under the existing standard? And really what I'm getting at is he was approved for 10 buildings, he's built three, he's talking about building one more, there's still a substantial amount of land at the south portion of the site. Would there be an opportunity to do something on the surface that would if the site was lowered a foot or whatever, that could be considered drainage. That would accommodate the drainage, I should say.
I think so. I think there's plenty of surface area, certainly, to do some kind of a retention structure. Certainly a retention structure could be constructed underground, which would not affect the use of the site, but it would, of course, affect the cost to develop the site. In fact, both options would affect the cost to develop the site. And a surface option would, of course, eventually restrict, as you got toward the last couple buildings, would restrict the area available to construct buildings.
Okay.
And yes, we did. We were trying to look for creative solutions. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Maybe I'll save my other questions for Mr. Ford when he comes up. And so I think Barbara asked the question about redeveloped. So that had nothing to do with the fact that this was in on previous.
We invested a very lot of money, pretty much redoing the whole street. As far as the drainage on Front Street, it has all been redirected out towards to the west. So I haven't seen it flood since the inception of all that work over there. And the intent, obviously, is to build all those buildings. Thank God I didn't build more than the first three, because it would have been a disaster. We obviously took the big hit back in the 10 years ago, and I would like to actually do more than one. I would like to try to finish this whole thing up and get through it, but the issue is there's a big economic issue, just because we did lower the rents tremendously just to accommodate for the recession, and they're just not coming back. So not only that, the buildings are becoming more expensive. I've calculated out the retention. It's totally cost prohibitive if I have to incorporate that retention in there. But my biggest concern is we completed the original site requirements. We did all the sidewalks, curbs, gutter, all the drainage across the site. We did all the drainage on the site to go to. We put the retaining walls in. We put the fiber conduits, all the gas, all the sewer, all the water. I mean, we spent thousands and thousands trying to get that done, so that all we had to do was build the buildings at this point. So I guess I'm confused why I'm all of a sudden having to do something different. I'm under the assumption that we already completed everything that was done. So if somebody...
Okay.
That's my situation.
So, Brad, of the creative solutions that staff had just mentioned, had spoke with you about, were there any that seemed to could work or would seem to be appealing?
Frankly, I don't remember a lot of creative discussion going on. It was mostly what the ordinance says and how it was vested, and I didn't have any option. It wasn't vested, so I didn't have options.
Okay.
When I did my research on the actual cost, it just was very, very cost prohibitive to do that. I'd love to finish that project out, guys. I really would. I just am really struggling just even with this taken out of the equation. I don't even know if it's going to pencil out.
And your thought is you're talking about doing the rest of the project?
It's a great, great project, and I'm building the buildings with exceptional quality. So it's a niche that it's hard to fill down here, because there's not a lot like that around here. But they won't be antiquated. I mean, they're real set up.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Brad. Is there anyone else that would like to address the item before the council? So, Greg, I have a couple more questions. And I know you've been using vesting with respect to a map. Now, is there anything in state law that talks about someone vesting a right based on a substantial investment in the project itself, since, as Mr. Ford points out, there had been a substantial investment with respect to sidewalk, curb, gutter, streets, and other things? And maybe Mr. Buckingham could weigh in on this.
Well, I'll start by saying that I'm not aware of such a thing, and I'm actually just the opposite. I'm somewhat aware that projects that develop over a long period of time often face similar challenges. What's unusual about this project is that most of the buildings, or the first three buildings, were constructed back in 2001, and yet the project's still entitled. Here it's 2015. That's somewhat unusual, but again, not necessarily unusual in terms of the economy showing significant swings in the value and the profitability of the buildings. But I'm not aware of any law. I defer to the city attorney or Director Buckingham if they are aware of one.
Mm-hmm. City attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. I think what I have am familiar with is in some instances when there are issues of vesting and issues of imposition of certain requirements, the courts have measured the amount of investment versus the size of the project. So if 90% done and there are some impositions and on the last phases or on some smaller amount, that issue has been addressed in court decisions, and in some instances the developer would be excused from having to meet new requirements. You know, I think the tension here is that you know, standards are applied at the issuance of building permits, and that's been the law for a very long time. And that's where I think staff is having a difficulty dealing with these issues. Okay. But bypassing the public safety and the Ford's position is understandable with regard to having put quite a bit of money in developing the site. But I can research if so instructed, but I'm not hopeful that there is some door that I can find that would open that for him.
Okay. And then the question I had was, we keep collecting stormwater fees. We're talking about looking at them again when we're bringing up, I guess, water rates. So what are those fees? What can we use those for? And are we collecting? And more specifically, if we had adequate fees and it was a regional basin or a basin that served more than one property owner, would that be something that would qualify for that?
Well, I think you'd, first of all, in terms of the stormwater fees that we're collecting currently, most of them go largely for operational costs. There is some maintenance costs associated with the current drainage or storm system. Certainly, and maybe this is a question for Greg. Greg, do we currently collect impact fees for storm drains?
Not that I'm aware of.
So, Mr. Mayor, what you would need to do is then go through the development impact fee process, which is, you know, a piece of infrastructure that has general benefit. And as long as you follow that process, we just have not implemented that particular process itself.
Okay, very good. And I know that's kind of a bit of a tangent, and that would have been a nice conversation to have outside of this, but the item before us is either a waiver or looks like amendment to the standard. So, and you're so option two, basically, staff is, you're saying that this is the only. Let me see if I can find where he said. You said this is the only entitled project prior to June 26th that still has a valid approval. Is that, have we confirmed that?
That was based on research from the Community Development Department, yes. So
okay.
It's the only project that has yet to be completed.
Okay. And so what's the difference between this option two and option three is you're asking for a definition of redeveloped sites in option three?
Option three would basically step the standard back prior to 2006. It would provide a credit, and it wouldn't have to be the exact same credit. Prior to 2006, there was no credit for what was on, I'm sorry. Prior to 2006, there was credit given to redeveloped projects for impervious surfaces that were on site. After 2000, with under option three for redeveloped sites, or simply step back and say that, you know, redeveloped sites get full credit or some version of that, some partial credit. Option two is simply to say that for projects that were approved prior to
2006,
this just wouldn't apply. And that could be an amendment to that 2006 standard.
I gotcha. Okay. So, I think fair and equitable across the board. But I think Mr. Ford makes a good point, being someone who was on the council long ago, knowing that this was a redevelopment area. There were structures and concrete on this site. As a matter of fact, the irony is when we were going through the lobbying effort to save redevelopment, we actually pointed to his project as a successful redevelopment. This is something we need to have more discussion over. So, Miriam, you have any thoughts?
I'm a little bit torn because I really, really want this area developed. It's crucial. On the other hand, we sit up here talking about green streets and water conservation and drainage, and I also want to stick to those standards as well, so I'm a little bit torn. One thing that worries me a little bit is if this area is developed without these deterrents, the potential flooding on the street, and then we as a city have allowed this project to go forward, and then there's flooding, and you have unhappy business owners and residents. So, and I'm just not sure. And you know, Mr. Ray did his best to explain it, but he doesn't have a crystal ball as to how bad it would be with 10 buildings. So that part gives me a little bit of pause as well. But. So I don't know. I want to hear what you guys have to say, I guess.
Barbara?
I think I would prefer to have input from all five, from the full council, before making a decision.
Oh, okay.
Because, again, I have mixed feelings about the decision.
Okay. But I didn't see that coming. No.
You didn't?
No. I mean, it's probably a good direction. I think you all know kind of where I'm leaning. And I think after Greg explained to me what option three entails, because I will tell you, I wasn't thrilled with what was required of Taco Bell when they redeveloped, especially when they are literally two blocks north of the biggest retention basin in South County. So that was an interesting one, and I think Chevron was very interesting. So if nothing else, we need to find a way to give credits to these projects, this one, at least this one that was entitled, and it was in a truly a redevelopment area. So I don't know what the timing is, but if we want to continue this to a date certain, I think that would be good. And like I said before, chances are looking slimmer and slimmer that I may not be here on August 17th. So I think with that.
You know, Mr. Mayor, the only I know that Mr. Ford is anxious to move on. I'm not clear as to what his timing is. You may want to consider that.
Okay. Brad, what's your timing?
If it takes a while to get everybody on board to have another meeting, I can wait a while. I feel real strong about this, and I can bring some more people that maybe could describe their side of it. I didn't think it would be this much going on tonight. I'm kind of all by myself up here.
Okay, very good. So, City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor.
I'm guessing 60,000 to 70,000 per site. That's about $500,000 in cost.
You said per site? Or? Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think
okay.
If you want some addition in terms of the creative discussion, maybe I could weigh in on that a little bit. You know, the site design is very fully developed. That is that with parking and the building, there's really nothing else on the site. It's just all building and parking.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very small amounts of landscape. So there's not a lot of option on site for surface retention. So by expending more money on reducing impervious surfaces, you still would have to build an underground retention basin to keep the site design as it was approved. But options might, you know, as you mentioned earlier, an option might be to look at one of the last units and say, oh, I want to make that a retention area.
Area needed.
Certainly, reduction of parking would provide area for retention. I don't know about, you know, beyond that, I don't know. There may be requirements or restrictions against doing that.
So I think we are not at a point where we can make a decision tonight, and so why don't we see if someone wants to make a motion to continue this to a date certain, and then we can have some additional discussion and maybe some ongoing conversations with staff and the and between the staff and the applicant. So someone want to make a motion?
I move that we put this off until the August 17th.
My suggestion, so I would suggest at a minimum going to September 8th.
September 8th.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's a motion to continue this to September 8th.
Yes.
I won't be here.
And then it would
be the 21st?
21st.
Okay. And what?
Phillip 66.
Is that
day.
Doable for you, Mr. Ford?
Well, that's okay. That's okay. It's okay.
It might be 11 at night, but.
When is the league? Oh, the next day?
Oh, that's right.
And I think it's the following week.
Next week.
Yeah, we should be okay. Okay, so your motion is to continue this to September 24th. Okay. I don't know. Okay, so we have a motion and we have a second. There's no additional discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's take a quick 7-minute break. Let's reconvene at 8:10. I'm going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council item number 8. What I would like to do is exercise the mayor's prerogative at this point and move to item number 10, which is the discussion regarding installation of a crosswalk at the intersection of Oak Park and Brighton, because I know the individual that's interested in it is here, and then we'll come back to item number 9. Okay. So, who's so let's move to item number 10. Oh, city attorney.
Certainly. Thank you, Ms. Petker. Honorable Mayor, council members, item 10 is meetings ago. This deals with the continued request for installation of a crosswalk in the vicinity of Oak Park and Brighton. As everybody's familiar, Oak Park is an arterial in our city. It runs
for our purposes, from 101 all the way down to Highway 1. In 2008, because of the repeater requests for a potential signal, a warrant study was commissioned by the council. It was performed, and the pertinent parts of that study are attached to the staff report. The study, in short, concluded that there's insufficient traffic patterns to justify a signal at that intersection, and more importantly, even if a signal was justifiable, if warrants justified installation of the signal, the location of that intersection would not make a signal advisable due to the proximity to Grover to Grand Avenue, and due to the undulation in terrain that's on top of the hill going east from there, or that would be north of from there. Why is that important? Only potential way to have a crosswalk at anywhere on any street, actually, of that magnitude would be in conjunction with a traffic signal. In other words, installation of a crosswalk by itself without a controlled intersection by the traffic signal would not be in any way doable. That's simply a formula for getting somebody hurt. There are immunities that are available to cities for what's known as either road design or dangerous conditions on public properties. In other words, if an intersection or a structure in public roadway is found to have been a contributing cause to an accident or a pedestrian injury, as long as the city have proceeded with the design and installation of that public improvement in a reasonable and prudent manner in compliance with all the standards, there are immunities that are available to cities that protect them from paying out large sums of money when the car insurance in a particular instance does not cover the damages. Those immunities go away if the public improvements are installed in a manner that's not consistent with either standards or recommendations or regulations. I have met with our risk liability representative, Roy Angel from CJPIA, and spent some time discussing this issue, and they are 100% in concurrence with the conclusions reached in the 2008 study and the conclusions that I reach in the staff report, and that is there really isn't a feasible way of installing a traffic signal or a crosswalk at that location, especially absent any warrants that would justify that. Here's the overview of the intersection. As you can see, I think everybody's familiar with it. The separation between Brighton and Grand Avenue is not a long distance. The creation of a traffic signal there, even if the warrants justified it, would potentially result in traffic backups, which would end up ending near the top of the hill, and vehicles traveling up the hill at a high level of speed would be then coming over the hill and encountering a line of stopped cars, a condition that would undoubtedly result in problems. You have the power and the authority to order staff and to spend money on having another warrant study conducted at that intersection. But as I've mentioned, even if those warrants come back with sufficient traffic patterns to justify a signal, you would have to think very carefully about whether or not that location is appropriate for a traffic signal.
At the case,
It's a little bit more complicated than that. I think that because this is a joint pool, it's not a classic insurance company where you have a policy that can be, acts outside of the policy are not covered. I think that an installation of a crosswalk against warrants and against CJPIA recommendation would risk some sanctions to the city, including potentially a removal
which is a power that CJPIA board does have in an event that a city takes action that are injurious to the entire pool. If an accident, knock on wood, let's hope it never happens, but should an accident occur there, a very, very high level of exposure to liability. And depending on the severity of the damages, that liability could reach millions depending on what happens. And that risk would be then absorbed by the pool and all the other members of the pool. And that generally is not a position that they want to be put in twice.
Thank you.
And can you maybe make the distinction between a marked and unmarked crosswalk as it relates to California state law and liability?
Well, as I understand your question, an unmarked crosswalk is any intersection. And at any
That's
intersection,
correct.
you have the right to try to cross the street. That's an unmarked crosswalk. A marked crosswalk is a crosswalk that is lined, a false sense of security for the pedestrians. If they see two lines written on the pavement, they feel like if they stepped in between them, they are protected from traffic. Everybody's going to stop because they're in the crosswalk. We all know that, unfortunately, that is not the case. And there has been case law where marked crosswalks in an uncontrolled intersection have created liability because the contention was that the city marked it out and they're inviting people to cross the street at that location. That location is not safe, and therefore they contributed to the damages that that occurred. And generally speaking, car versus pedestrian does not end well for the pedestrian.
Okay. So the circulation element calls for a signal on Oak Park, and I want to say it talked about a signal at a location further north. I don't know if there was Saratoga or some other location. Does that ring a bell, Bob? Yes, from the 2008 study, was Brighton the only location where warrants were reviewed? Do we know?
Yeah. My recollection is that was specifically looked at, that particular intersection, because it does cost a lot of money to run warrants on each corner. It's every intersection is an additional set of data that has to be gathered.
Yeah, and very good, because I was going to ask you the question of what would it cost to have the warrants redone? Do we know?
I omitted to get specifically the information. I am going to estimate, and it's an estimate. It probably is for a singular intersection. It's probably in a $8,000 to $10,000 range.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. So, if there's no additional questions, let me open this up to the public.
I had one more. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I was surprised to see it. And I was just wondering, how that crosswalk relates, with. How that one is permissible and not one at Brighton.
Mr. Mayor, if
yes.
I could, I'm going to ask the police chief if I'm aware. Saratoga, there's a stop.
There is a stop sign.
But I'm not aware that there is a crosswalk there.
No, the intersection of Saratoga and Oak Park has a three-way stop sign, basically,
yeah.
In private driveways. But they have limit lines and not crosswalks there.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Okay, I'm going to open this up to the public. Does anyone want to speak to the item that's before the council tonight?
John A. Watson. Have less population, we have less cars. A warrant says we can't have one. Yeah, Guadalupe, 4,000 people, has a crosswalk, lighted. They have a stop sign, lighted. Roy Grandy has a crosswalk a block south of Margaret Harlow in the hospital. I go through there, Roy Grandy, a young man, city engineer, very nice. I ask him, I went before the city council there last meeting. But agenda, you can't talk, you can't reply. So I went back, but he's been busy. There is no reason in this world why there couldn't or shouldn't or hasn't been a crosswalk from Saratoga down to Ramon. The man that owns Burger King, Mr. I mean, we're in the dark ages. Let's get out of the dark ages and get progress and do something to help the people. You know, there's people less fortunate than you in a gated community. There's people less fortunate in money that can't afford a car, a bus to get to. Been there 58 years. For 85% of my purchases has been in Arroyo Grande. Because we didn't have anything here. We had a drugstore over here, and a bank, and a gas station. But my money has always gone, and my neighbors, and everybody goes to Arroyo Grande. I was looking at this. I don't know who took that picture of 18th Oak Park out of a car, nobody. I have never, ever gone down that street while somebody out there parked or somebody's driving at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I've come back from Santa Barbara. You know, this is childish. It's all this. And you're bound determined that I'm not going to get that for the people that I care about. It's not for me. I don't walk. I try to turn left, but it's hard. That's why I drive pickup, because nobody on that street turns left. It's dangerous. They fly down there. Yeah, that sign out there, that doesn't mean anything. So when are you going to progress? Ward? Who is the person that gives out the awards? Who's that person? I'd like to know that person. Because I'll tell you, there's something wrong. 5 times I've been to the valley for cattle sales. And 3 times I've had people tell me you have relatives that live about the people less fortunate. You live in a gated community. You could care less. Your husband could care less when he worked, when it was on there. Because we are progressing. There's more cars. There's more people. A war doesn't allow that.
John, is there? If I may, yes. Okay. Is there anyone else? Chief Peters.
Just reviewing the map and photographs, there is a crosswalk at Newport and Oak Park Boulevard on the north side of the intersection. So there is a crosswalk going across that block.
Hmm. Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay, see no one come forward. I'm going to close the public comment, bring it back to the council. Let's have some discussion. Sure.
Discuss. I've actually heard this from multiple citizens. Mr. Weissong's not the only one. And I think it's unfortunate that, but I just don't see a way without a warrant that we could put a crosswalk there. I stated, is that still a crosswalk? Is it protected? And kind of wondered, well, how could that one be existing safely? Because I would not personally cross at that crosswalk, even though I live there. And I do have to get to the other side of the street kind of often, but I usually walk all the way down. I would not use that. So that's another thing in considering funding a warrant study, that we may fund it, we may get the crosswalk, and I know that we'd ever get a traffic light there. So I do hear what people are saying, and other people have also been contacting me by email about it, but I just don't think it can be done. But that being said, there was were some valid concerns about Burger King and business owners, and maybe we could reach out to them and ask them about their traffic issues, and please come to the traffic committee and get that process started. Please don't complain in a vacuum. Complain in public. So, okay, that's it.
Okay. I'm wondering if Mr. Ray or can really come and provide some clarification for folks who are either here or been watching on the warrants, or maybe city attorney, maybe you can do this in combination.
Is this working? Good. So Greg Ray, Public Works Director, City Engineer. The purpose of a warrant study really looks back to the purpose of the roadway itself. The purpose of roadways is to move traffic, in particular vehicles. And so reason for warrant studies is that adding controls to a roadway reduce the volume of traffic that a roadway can carry, and thus reduce the effectiveness of the roadway. And there are a number of detrimental effects. At its genesis is there enough pedestrian traffic, or is there enough vehicular or bicycle cross traffic at a particular intersection such that the competing directions of travel, their main street and the side street that's trying to enter the main street, such that their traffic volumes are competing at a level that it warrants having that competing traffic volume enter or cross the roadway, thus disrupting the main roadway's traffic. The warrant study, however, further goes to consider volumes of pedestrians, volumes of bicycles, and some safety impacts. Now, how many accidents have there been? How many pedestrian accidents have there been? How close to the nearest crosswalks? What is the volume of traffic? What are the peak hour traffic volumes? It looks at a number of things: stopping site distance, roadway geometry. All these factors are considered in a warrant study, and ultimately, as the city attorney has stated, when you combine all those factors together, a warrant study basically tells you, A, if it's prudent and justifiable to have a crosswalk or a controlled intersection, and B, if the volume of traffic even makes sense to have a controlled crosswalk or a controlled intersection or a crosswalk.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was looking for.
One traffic control signal needs studies. It requires that an engineering study of traffic conditions, pedestrian characteristics, and physical characteristics of the location shall be performed to determine whether installation of traffic control signal is justified at that particular location. Failure to follow that manual in the manner in which one designs roads or designs intersections is a wide open invitation to liability.
Okay. Thank you. Barbara?
I'm wondering if it would make any difference if we lower the speed limit to 25 from the top of the hill down.
Chief, I think on the speed limit.
So the speed limit on North Oak Park, being what it is now, is you can set speed limits, but realistically it's going to be in the 85th percentile mm-hmm. of what the traffic currently drives.
Right.
From the last study, I'm remembering off the top of my head, the last study was about 40 miles an hour is the 85th percentile. And that's why radar enforcement is difficult on that roadway at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So increasing or reducing the speed, it gets to the point of it may not be enforceable. So.
Okay.
So basically what you're saying is the posted speed limit is 35 mm-hmm. and 15% or more of the people are driving in excess of that.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we had this conversation about in downtown about trying to lower speed limits, and we needed to take some pretty drastic measures to even have go back out and justify mm-hmm. that. Okay. Anyway, anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say that I completely understand what Mr. Wasung and maybe a few others have talked about, but I just, that roadway, I mean, literally, when I drive it every day, and there are people who, I drive 30 to 35, and they still go screaming past me. I just, you know, from a legal standpoint, I just don't know how we could justify it, because I think Greg Ray hit the nail right on the head. Is it prudent? Is it justifiable? Are we opening up the city? And when I say city, and I always want to make sure people, when we say entity, there is no entity that's the city. It is the citizens of this community, the 13,000 folks who would be bearing the brunt of any lawsuits and anything of that nature. So while I can understand the frustration, I just don't see that there is anything that's justifiable or prudent about this. And creating a controlled intersection. So I don't really know if there's much we can do. And I will say that Mr. Marion had talked to me years ago about trying to create a stay clear zone. And the problem that he runs into there is when you see these stay clear zones, there's one in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara right next to the fire station. It lines up with an actual roadway or intersection. And so there's nothing that lines up with it on the Arroyo Grande side, so we would be having them keep a section clear and create an even more dangerous situation. So it's an unfortunate situation we find ourselves in. So at this point, what is the council going to do?
I would just add that, you know, we are planning to obviously redo Oak Park, and hopefully the smoother, smoother pavement may not reduce speed, but, you know, the crosswalk that is present at Newport will be repainted and brighter, and those who choose to use that crosswalk, it'll be there. I won't be, but...
I don't know if the staff would recommend that.
Well, it's there, so I guess it was warranted at some point.
I'm going to reserve... Any staff's formal position on the existence or justifiability of that. I'm sure we'll be taking
be
a look at that as we resurface the street.
Okay. So I guess at this point, staff, you're just saying receive and file this report?
Yes.
That Mr. Wasung brought up earlier that I failed to get council's input on was the wanting us to write a letter to Caltrans. I think he had made reference to the traffic on 101. I drive it every day, and he's exactly right. It's a mess there. And so I think anything we can do to help the situation, if it warrants writing a letter to Caltrans, we should consider putting that on the agenda and sending a letter. Okay? Very good.
Yep.
So we're going to move back to item number 9, and this is a status report regarding a special event permit for the Grover Beach United Vehicle Show in consideration of a recommendation to set public hearing.
Please. Our show that is planned for early September. Actually, the city began working with Grover Beach United representatives in April. We've had consistent and several meetings throughout that period, and items have kept coming in slowly, but we are at a point now where we have most of the items that are required. The council is required to review and approve the application prior to the event actually being approved per se or getting a permit. So at this point, staff just simply wanted to report on the status. We received the last map just ahead of this council meeting, and there are a couple of things that remain outstanding, but we think they'll be able to be dealt with by the time the public hearing comes around. So staff is recommending that the public hearing be set for the next meeting, which would be August 17th. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
No.
Okay.
No. It was a very thorough report, and I think we've heard a lot on this issue, so none.
Okay. So this is a regular business item. I'm not going to open this up to the public. So is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion that we set a public hearing for August 17th to review the application to conduct the Grover Beach Street Machine and Muscle Car Nationals.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Let's move on to item number 11. This is a status report regarding capital improvement projects. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The Public Works Director is going to be setting this up for you, but I'll go ahead and proceed with the introduction. Recently, the council has requested a status report on the capital improvement. Recommend that you receive this report as well. Obviously, you do have the ability to provide any direction as may be necessary. But in terms of this year's capital improvement program, the current CIP outlines 29 projects that pretty well range the gamut as indicated in the report, everything from parks and rec related items to water, sewer, et cetera. Total expenditures for this year are approved by the council at 9 point that focusing resources on what we believe is the council priority projects, and I'd like to go through these in detail with you. Essentially, the first project that we think is a priority is the Oak Park Rehabilitation Project. It's been before you in recent weeks. The budget for this project is almost $1.7 million. Recently, the council augmented the actual project design. Currently, the boundaries of the project now include both the intersection of Grand and Oak Park, as well as Grand easterly to the city limits. The original project boundaries, the project goes up over the hill, actually to the northern city boundary, which is about where Sierra is, actually. We have, as we indicated to you when we presented this last, ongoing discussions continue with Phillips 66 regarding their encroachment permit. Realistically, those discussions are really all about the level of contribution, and we hope to have those discussions completed in the very near future. Does not appear that these ongoing discussions with Phillips 66 is going to delay their project start. Their project is expected to be underway in late September. I should mention that we believe that the budget for Oak Park, as indicated last time, will be augmented both by the contribution from Phillips 66 and also a contribution from the city of Arroyo Grande. What we're working on with Arroyo Grande is actually to have their contribution pay for that last piece of Oak Park Boulevard, which goes down to El Camino, because that's actually their responsibility. Moving along. Nope.
What I'd like to do is make this session a little more interactive.
All right.
So we're not just kind of blowing through this.
Sure.
So can you back up on
sure.
Oak Park? Any questions from the council members on this project?
No, none on this one.
Barbara, anything?
Mm-hmm. None.
Okay. So I do have a question. So you said Phillips now is not going to begin because working on theirs until late September?
Yeah, that's Greg. Any updates?
If not just tonight, but any meeting going forward, I cannot go to the grocery store or to Kennedy Club Fitness. People are anxious. People are interested. And whatever we can do to expedite this project, I think we should do. So I want to know, do we have firm dates from Phillips? Firm start date.
Our last discussion with them revolved around the contribution and their anticipated start date. They were pushing very hard to have the encroachment permit from the city, both cities of Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, in fact, which are still outstanding, to have them approved early this month, as early as possible, so that they could, in fact, start in September. I suspect, since they're not starting in our city, that there are factors that could affect their anticipated schedule. It's a somewhat of a linear project for them. They're not working, I believe they're working with two contractors at most. And so that's their schedule.
Are they starting at El Camino Real? Where are they starting?
They're starting out on Old Oak Park. Well, it's not Old Oak Park. Out. They're starting all the way out at the refinery site on Price Canyon Road.
Price Canyon.
Hmm. Okay, so.
That's understood. In fact, staff is off for a period of years after this street has been rehabilitated.
So the suggestion that I would have, and I know I'm only one vote, but I'm sure Mr. Lee would agree with me, is anything we can do to help Phillips move along quicker, we should do.
Understood.
So now, Arroyo Grande's got two sections on Oak Park, correct? Up there on a portion of El Camino Real, and then also in front of Rite Aid, the church, and I think all the way up to maybe Brighton. Do they have one lane?
I have to admit that that was historical information that was presented by folks that were here before me. In my department.
Mm-hmm.
Upon further research and discussion with the city of Arroyo Grande, it's quite possible that they don't have a responsibility for those areas, the one lane that I had believed they had responsibility for.
Wow.
But they do have the section between Sierra Drive and the bridge deck, or the 101 bridge deck, so on the far north end.
So you're saying Grover Beach has responsibility for basically 98% of this street?
Basically.
Okay. I guess we can't go back and revise the successful bidder to expedite the process. Is that,
yes.
Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
And so then you'll have to come to the council and right. See if there's interest in setting a special meeting.
That was a question that came into us from one of the engineering firms. And certainly points for each week they were able to shorten that up. And a question that I've seen indicated that some firms may be able to shorten it up if the council was willing to hold a special meeting. And those are all factors that we'll bring back to you with that design and recommendation.
Because I would say I think that's a really good idea. I'm glad you did that. And so the question is, do you have to have that? Do we need to have that discussion earlier rather than later? Or are you confident that you're going to get obviously sufficient bids? And if are people or firms going to hopefully be entitled?
You're going to have to look at. So you'd need to look at the total picture and determine if the streamlining of the bid is something that you would like to proceed with and hold that special council meeting.
And then the thought then is a firm that chooses to streamline, what happens if they are trying to streamline it but their price goes up above someone that's not looking to streamline? How do we reconcile that?
Well, I think that's, again, for further council consideration. If you remember, first of all, engineers are selected first by their the work that they do and not by cost. Cost is a secondary factor. So you would have the opportunity to weigh both of those things and not be precluded from one by the other.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure we do have that flexibility because there are certain contracts where we don't.
Right. Right. Those tend to be more construction contracts where you're absolutely by law obligated to select the lowest responsible bidder. You're not held to the same process for okay. selecting of consultants.
Very good. Thank you, Bob. Okay, let's move on.
The next is the street rehabilitation projects. These are the ones that have been funded by Measure K-14. As council has authorized, there are really two sets of projects. The first set are Brighton from Oak Park to 13th Street. The second is South 7th. From Grand to Rockaway, and the third is a piece of Nice from 12th to 13th. That's the first set of streets that will be done, and the council has already awarded the contract to Cal Portland, and we would expect that they will be doing their neighborhood meetings and hopefully should be under construction by the end of this month or the 1st of September. The second set of projects, and I'd like to go over that list. It's in the report, but there was some discussion about that earlier as to which streets were included in that second section. In this second group of streets include Saratoga Avenue from Oak Park to 8th Street, North 13th Street from West Grand Avenue to Atlantic City, North 5th from south of the Marbursa development to Saratoga Avenue, North 7th Street from West Grand Avenue to Brighton Avenue, South 13th Street from Farrell Road to Highland Way, South 16th Street from Mentone Avenue to Nice, Lynn Street, and Parkview from 4th Street to Charles Avenue. Alternates, depending on the bid, are South 14th Street from West Grand Avenue to Long Branch Avenue and Dover Court. This phase two is already under design. As you can see from the project schedule, we expect to receive those results in mid-fall and should be going out to bid shortly thereafter. Construction could occur either late this year or early next year, according to that schedule. Of course, some things will be weather dependent. That did the third set of streets, and we'll be moving into design for those streets. However, what we'll need to do before we're able to proceed with construction on the third phase is we will need to go ahead and issue, go through another bond issue and sale of bonds. And we're contemplating doing that, initiating the same process we used last year to secure that funding by March of next year. So that third set of streets would likely early summer of next year.
Okay. So let's see if there's any questions on street rehabilitation projects. Barbara, you have anything?
No, I don't.
Okay, Mary?
I had a couple. Just in looking at the 2015-1.
Doing this with every part of the contract with the contractor, we'll actually be holding neighborhood meetings in advance of the construction project. The purpose of those meetings is to discuss with the neighborhood the schedule for construction, the level of disruption, what kinds of alternates may be available for their use, and details about the design itself so that they will see how that project will be constructed in their particular neighborhood.
Okay, that's good. I think people will be happy about that. One other question slash comment I had is, it's coming as a little bit of a surprise to me that we will be through the entire $5 million just getting through this 2015-1 and 2015-2. For some reason, I was under the impression we would also get through that 2016 list or perhaps part of it.
Did at critical street repairs that the council may desire to get done, in addition to the streets we've called out for bond funding.
Okay. Well, as you know, as long as we keep that money, one thing I worry about for the future, and we can all think about at a future date, is whether the citizens are gonna, how they're gonna feel about this second bond sale. I mean, it's not that they vote on it, but I will like to get feedback because it's gonna affect people's bills, and maybe at that time we could use that money if needed.
All I can say there is that we did a bit of that when we went through the prioritization process, as you'll recall. And actually, with the public input that we received, at least it was the results indicated that those that responded were interested in seeing more streets done sooner, even if it did cost them a little bit more.
That is correct. That's what I'm understanding.
Yes, it did. And if that's the feedback we continue to get, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm.
But we need to get some streets under construction.
Mm-hmm.
So. Which I'm going to be pushing back hard tonight. Do we have a firm date for the neighborhood meetings from Cal Portland?
No, we do not yet.
Okay, because in reading the staff report for bringing Cannon on, they had given a date of August 10th. So I'm just trying to reconcile when will we know they're going to have these meetings and start mobilization on these streets. It's September, and I'm starting, the community is starting to become very antsy about approving a $48 million bond, and yet we have gone 9 months with not one street under construction. So how do we convey to them the urgency to get them out there since they've won the contract?
Greg, can you, don't you have a pre-construction meeting scheduled for like next week?
It's not scheduled yet, but we're pushing for a pre-construction meeting next week. There's always some logistics to consider who's available and when and how, but we're pushing for the pre-construction meeting next week, which would lay out quite a bit of the features of the project coming up, including neighborhood outreach, including a website, opening a website that will provide continuous information to the residents who will be affected by the project. Every detail of the construction, traffic control, public convenience will all be discussed at that meeting. So we're pushing very hard. Cal Portland seems excited to get started. So I'm not seeing any impediments currently, but I can't say for certain until that meeting is actually formally scheduled.
So. Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Lee had asked me to ask a couple of questions, and I reluctantly, and I guess I was remiss, didn't pull the item from consent, but I can ask now. With the Cannon contract in July 6th, there was an estimate that it was going to be $72,000, and then tonight we were considering $105,000. Do we know what the difference was, why there was such a big disparity in the estimate and what they're coming forward with?
No, not really. Most of the proposals came in fairly narrow band of costs.
Oh, good. Okay.
So at least looking at what the consultants thought it would cost, they all seemed to be somewhat in agreement. I'd say it was an underestimate on our part.
Okay. So. And then they talked about taking 5 months for three small streets. Is that typical rule of thumb, or is that because there are some challenges with portions of Brighton?
Well, there is some waterline work associated with this. You know, again, when we lay out a contract, we have to leave enough time. You have to leave a little bit of extra time in the contract for uncertainties. Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced the project will take 5 months.
Okay.
But that's how much time the design engineer determined that it was appropriate.
Okay. And I will say that I'm satisfied with the status report on 215-2, the streets that we've been talking about. So is the expectation that they would design all those streets as a batch and come back, or is there an option for them to do, let's say, North 13th from Atlantic City to Grand? So I'm just kind of wondering what the expectation is on the how those are designed and how those move forward in construction.
Currently, in order to move the whole project forward as quickly as possible, we developed a very fast-paced design schedule. In fact, we heard quite a bit about it in the proposal process. Mm-hmm. But the firm that was selected is going to be able to meet our quick schedule, and they're all going to come out at the same time.
Great.
And they'll all, at least as far as we know today, will all be constructed at the same time. A lot of this depends on the outcome of the design and the final engineer's estimate. There could be options available to us depending on what the final engineer's estimate is.
Yeah.
And remember that the initial estimates are based on the pavement management program, which is more of a managerial level estimate. So.
Okay.
We're hoping we have the option to consider maybe a faster paced design or even breaking the project up so that we can take advantage of some economies.
Right. Thank you. No, and I'd say you guys did a really good job on that, and pleased with the progress on that. And then I think the only thing, last thing, is any progress on developing a statement of qualifications or a list of engineers that might help down the road and the design process?
No, not yet. We have been fully employed getting requests for proposals out and evaluating those. It's turning out to be a pretty time-consuming process with as many projects as we have going at once. So we're desperately seeking getting that process moving because we think it will streamline and also give us some options that we don't have otherwise.
Okay, great. Thank you. So what you got next, Bob?
Well, I blew it again. Transit station expansion project. As you know, the budget for this project is almost $2.3 million. The funding is really coming from a couple of different sources. We have a very minor amount of local grant monies that are being used as match funds. But the majority of this, well over $1 million, I think it's close to 1.5 or 1.6, is actually coming from the CMAQ funding. And the remainder of it is still some residual 1B funding that is still included here. Because this went to CMAQ funding, it required that we actually complete a NEPA for this when, as you're aware, we had previously done the CEQA for it. In fact, this project also has the coastal development permit in place. As you recall, in terms of the budget itself, I mean the project itself, this will extend the physical improvements of the depot south of the depot itself into that area that is largely wooded at the current time, and you'll find that we'll relocate the bus loading facility and additional parking, plus provide additional access from Highway 1 to the entire project, both phases, the one that's existing as well as the one that will be coming down the road. In terms of these NEPA studies, some of them are underway already. These include the biological analysis. We're also doing a soils analysis, and there are some permitting issues that we need to move through with this project. we expect that and we'll get the help of the consultants on board to help us move through the permitting process, but we're expecting that the permitting process will take about 6 months itself. That's about 180 days. And as noted here, we're hoping to have this project under construction by the summer of 2016.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Any questions?
I just had one or two, but I know that we have to remain on a certain timeline in order to keep our grant. And with the projections, I see construction in 2017. Will we still be well within our timeline of not risking losing grant funding?
As long as that construction starts by 2016, we'll be, I think we have through 2017 to actually spend these dollars.
Okay. Yeah, as long as we really remain aware of that, because I know we have so many priorities, but I would hate for us to even come close to jeopardizing that.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that's just the process we have to go under. We have to go through now since they changed out the funding source, as you suggested, Bob.
Right.
So, okay.
Grover Beach Lodge. Actually, this is over and above the $9.8 million I gave you previously, and we'll need to amend the capital improvement program to include some facets of the lodge. We had previously included in the CIP, as the council will recall, the undergrounding, the water line. Some of that already is in the CIP, but we are establishing a new project, the Grover Beach Lodge. The estimated cost for all of the public improvements associated with the lodge is $5.2 million. We're looking at funding these improvements by a grant and public financing. We believe that we're going to be able, in fact, we are hoping to have on the council's next agenda is a public hearing regarding the grant application for the grant funding to the tune of about $2.3 million. We'll then be working with the council on a public financing that will allow us to basically borrow the remaining $3 million at a very low interest rate, and we would then have sufficient money to do all of the public improvements. And those include, just so everyone is aware, those include the parking lots, the associated with the lodge, the move of the sewer dump station. Ultimately, there'll be a significant amount of park amenities to the west of the lodge, and those are included as well as the undergrounding utilities that I already mentioned, and water and sewer to serve the site. The financing we hope to have in place by this fall will start the design later this fall, and hopefully have that completed by the spring, with construction of the public improvements by early summer 2016.
Okay. Any questions on this one?
I was just looking at the long-term timeline for the lodge, and it says that to begin the construction in June of 16, if we do that, if we do everything on schedule, it should be completed by March 2017.
Well, it's a possibility, and you know, you're one of the things in terms of bringing the lodge project online. There may be some of these improvements that will go earlier than others, so it's quite possible that we'll be able to do the parking lot, the sewer dump station removal, and then you may actually see the construction of the lodge follow those elements.
Because that date just struck me, March of 2017, because, you know, it'd be great to have them up and running then for summer 2017. And we should really, it doesn't look like no matter what we do, we're going to make summer 2016. But, you know, we've got to keep that in mind, that the summer months are crucial, I'm sure. So
it's 2000. Anything else with that one, Mr. Mayor?
No, and I knew that we have some additional discussions with Pacifica, and so I think we're good. We can move forward.
The next one I wanted to indicate beyond that, before I go to the still needs to be implemented. We're going to this fall retain the design consultant for the waterline upgrade project, and it is our hope that we'll need to go through a bid process. That bid process, I believe it's all in your schedule, but probably we'll have the waterline increase under construction by next spring.
And Bob, refresh everyone's memory or even clarify for those that are watching the waterline project, what is the location of that?
Actually, it's at a variety of different locations throughout the city. And maybe, Greg, you might be better able to answer that.
I'm taking a look now. I'm not sure if we actually identified the specific locations, but I have the CIP in front of me, so let me look real quick.
While he's doing that, I wanted to indicate that, again, the funding source is a community development block grant funding that we had to pursue competitively. We were able to get that grant. It totals $1.8 million. Actually, that's total project costs. The budget process, the council actually allocated a CIP project sheet to this project, and it is included in the CIP. Costs associated with the project per council direction, it spans a two-year period. The first year is an allocation of $25,000, and that's to be used for the completion of an engineering study that we, according to our schedule, will get underway late this year, and we'll have the results of that engineering study in front of the council sometime next spring before the actual budget cycle or part of the actual budget cycle, because you've allocated at the present time in that second year, I think it's, or you've identified, or we've identified about $300,000 in construction costs. But the council will have to review the engineering study and make some determination as to level of participation and how we proceed at that point. The Grover Beach Broadband Network has been an ongoing project. It delayed just in terms of getting the engineering design completed. I met with Mr. Williams last week, and it looks like actually the design is getting very close to completion. The mayor has scheduled a meeting with Mr. Williams and myself that will take place on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, and that should we should get more information on where this project status is at that time.
Very good. Thank you, Bob. Any questions?
No questions on that.
Okay. No.
All right.
I think, as I've noted, this covers what I've seen a status report on the top six or seven that are actually in the program. The remaining projects, we're really doing those or focusing on those as time will permit. Unless there is time and resources permit, unless there's a need foreseen by the council to pull one of those projects up and move forward with it, we're not we're progressing with those as we have time and resources. The complete list is on your schedule. What are we doing to try and augment our engineering situation? Council did authorize us to go out and hire a provisional associate engineer. We started the recruitment for and we're approaching it because it is a provisional appointment. We're recruiting until filled, which should help us expedite the process a little bit. I am pleased to at least say the response has been a little bit stronger than I anticipated. We have sectioned the first date that we're going to be calling and reviewing applications is actually we're just now the first date to review applications in the hopper occurred on Friday. So we're going to take a look at the first group of engineers that we have available, and we'll be and going through evaluating those applications and hopefully scheduling people for an interview. So it could be that if we're lucky and we're able to find the skilled individual we're looking for, depending on that skill level, we may be able to focus more attention on the CIP. And that's what the hope is. It's either that or development review. And the other avenue that we're using to try and augment engineering resources is to develop consultant resources as we need to, including the eventually getting to establishing the list that you referred to, Mr. Mayor.
Great. Thank you, Bob.
And in concluding remarks, this is the first status report. We will be bringing this back. I'd like to see it sooner and to try in that way to keep the council up to date on some of these issues as well as the progress we're making with the various projects.
Okay. Any final questions or comments from council members?
I just want to compliment you on the program schedule. That's exactly what I need to see.
Very good. Mary?
Yeah, thank you. Very informative.
And then, so I echo those compliments, and I do want to poll the council members who are here tonight. Are we all okay with the six or seven priorities that staff came with? Are you guys okay with what's been laid out and discussed by staff tonight?
I am.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So then staff talked about bringing this back on a regular basis.
Yes.
And quite honestly, I was thinking more of a monthly, not every 2 months. But what's the pleasure of the council?
I think monthly to begin with.
Okay.
So we get a rhythm, see what the rhythm is going, how much movement there is from month to month.
Sounds good. Okay. Any other direction on this, Bob? And
no, sir.
Great. And thank you for bringing up the waterline project. So that was the one question or comment I had had. So I didn't have to bring that up. So we took care of that. Thank you. Okay. Nice job, staff. Let's move on. We don't have any pooled consent agenda items. And let's see. Barbara, you have any committee reports?
Absolutely none. Everybody was on vacation during July.
Miriam?
Nothing. I can't believe it. That's a slow month.
And neither do I. I think there is a SLOCOG board meeting on Wednesday. There's a South County Sanitation District board Wednesday evening.
Give yourself some extra time.
I thought those moms are going to like breakfast or a happy hour.
Yes, well, and long lines at all the breakfast places.
Barbara, you said you didn't have anything?
No.
Okay. And I had mentioned probably a little out of order the discussion about a letter to Caltrans. Are you guys okay with that? Because it is problematic. And I know that Caltrans has something underway with respect to the climbing lane that comes on board at Avila Beach Drive.
Yes.
I think it was originally envisioned that there would be an auxiliary lane that would help relieve traffic, be a climbing lane for trucks. It's become very problematic where you got technically at one point four lanes narrowing down to two. Mm-hmm. So I know they're trying to fix that. And then I know Mr. Weissong's comment was about people driving slow in the fast lane. So
don't do it.
Anyway, okay. I don't believe I had anything else as far as communications goes. City Manager, any reports or comments?
The only comment I have, Mr. Mayor, is we did hear a comment in public comment regarding the vacant tanker storage.
Yes.
Along the tracks. I just wanted to update you. You had brought that to my attention and asked that I send an email actually to Union Pacific.
And thank you for that.
Which I did do. And to update you on that, I actually have a meeting set up for Wednesday at 1:30 in the afternoon with Lisa Stark, who's their director of public information. So.
Okay.
At least we've made that progress thus far.
Well, thanks for reaching out to them and let us know how your meeting goes. And my thought process would be, you know, yeah, they've been there a long time. Are there strategic spots that they could leave these tankers rather than right in our view corridor?
Especially during our tourist season. And, yeah, if you could keep us updated because – I have people within my own household ranting about that.
City Attorney, any reports or comments?
None tonight, thank you.
And while you have the mic, can you cover the closed session
items? Absolutely. And Honorable Mayor and Council members, staff would request the item number 5 be continued until we have a full council.
Agreed.
And it is the intent of the council to meet then on 4 items in closed session. Real property negotiations pertaining to the Sprint Corporation site location, a session with labor negotiators on various units, practically all of them, and then existing litigation, Lindsay versus City of Grover Beach.
Very good, and I have to step back. I did receive a letter from, looks like the Filipino community of San Francisco County regarding the Fiesta Filipina Queen 2013 Coronation and Scholarship Awards Night on Saturday, August 15th. I'm sure that the city manager and city clerk maybe can coordinate with council members who might be interested. Would you please give them my, let them know that I will not be able to attend, and perhaps we can see if the Mayor Pro Tem or any of the council members would like to attend. That'd be great. Okay. So with that, we're going to recess into closed session.